Thanks for joining us again. Jam-packed episode, Jared. Jam-packed.
Jam-packed?
Jam-packed. There's going to be a little bit of everything, right? The movie of
Except,
the week.
Quality?
That's fucking
debatable.
Debatable. The movie of the week is 2023's Malum, which is an interesting little picture. But before we get to that, Jared, let's dive straight into what we've been watching. I forgot to mention it last episode, so it was a couple of weeks ago, but I saw Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire. Stop. I think it's kind of run its race for a little bit. I thought Afterlife did a really good job. There was something about Afterlife that was kind of like emotional.
Yeah.
With the whole Egon.
Yep.
Some of that stuff it was really good, and I think they created enough interesting new stuff. But they really fuck it up.
Yeah.
This one. And if you still want to hang on to the old guys, give them one more movie and wrap the whole lot up. But or just ditch them totally.
Well, see, my thing is, I don't mind if you don't stop. Like, you keep making them, but maybe it's time to let
yeah, I think it's time to let the old guys go. Yeah.
Except for Ernie Hudson.
Oh.
I'll take as much Ernie Hudson.
God, I saw a picture of him the other day, 78 years old. He's looking in the best shape of his life.
I was one of those idiots that, like, my favourite was fucking, I was a Winston man.
Yeah.
When in the original movie, he was in it for about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But I was always a Winston fan. And maybe it was just the magnetic presence of Ernie Hudson.
It was.
I love the bloke.
Because he's probably the most, he gets a fair bit of screen time.
Yeah, good.
In this one. He gets a fair bit, a little bit more to do.
Yeah.
And I like that. I like the fact that they kind of reintegrate him quite well.
Yeah. You've kind of, like I'm yet to see it, but I'm going to take the kids to check it out. But you've kind of said basically everything that I've been reading. Like a lot of people say it's not necessarily not enjoyable, but there's just too many people in it and it gets stretched a bit thin.
Yeah. They needed to cut some stuff. I think Bill Murray's kind of
paycheck.
He's doing it for the paycheck, yeah. And I feel like Bill Murray's doing it as a people expect him to do it. And again, it's always nice to see him, but it's he's barely in it.
Yeah.
And there is way too many characters. The young characters from the last movie kind of get shortchanged with this bullshit story. It doesn't really bring much to the table. If I'm honest. So it'll be interesting to hear what you think of it. Now, what's the rest of my stuff was a lot of sort of true crime and documentary style.
Can't wait.
I watched one called Victim/Suspect, which was really good, all about women who said they were raped and then had it turned around on them and gone
Netflix?
From being the victim. Yes, it was on Netflix. Being the victim to basically being charged with falsifying reports, right? And it was looking at some of these cases and sort of saying, well, hang on a second, you went to falsifying reports, but yet if you look closely at the evidence, you kind of jumped the gun on it. So it was very interesting. I watched Files of the Unexplained.
Talk to me.
Files of the Uninteresting, basically. I mean, Netflix. You're fucking ashamed of yourself once again.
Look,
just trotting out crap.
I mean, you know exactly what I'm going to say. I scoured, saw no Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, I'm not interested.
I mean,
give me a fucking lake monster or something.
Super dirty. Super dirty that there was no Bigfoot. Like, I'm thinking that is a standard here.
Yeah.
All these fucking crackpots that you're into.
I'll take a fucking frogman or a Jersey Devil or anything. Just give me one of them.
I mean, fuck. You've got all these crackpots that you're prepared to interview for this shit, but you're not going to interview the people who are talking about Bigfoot? I mean, what are you on about?
Don't know what you're doing. Do not know what you're doing.
There is one interesting episode, and it's actually more about a group of guys who get sort of disappear when they went to a basketball game. They end up 70 miles off course.
Yeah.
And they find the corpses of a couple of them kind of on the way to a hunting cabin. And it looks like they've been there for weeks. Like one guy's been there for weeks.
Yeah.
And
I'd actually read about this.
There's a lot of interesting shit in there. And there's a lot of kind of like, what actually went on? It's actually intriguing.
Yeah.
But then the next episode's immediately about fucking UFOs.
too many UFOs. Let's recalibrate. 1 to 2 episodes on UFOs, 6 to 7 on Bigfoot. That's what you need to do to be successful with this shit.
As I told you, Jared, I think the standard of aliens arriving, picking up a couple of fucking rednecks out in the bush, probing their bums and sending them home is essentially the alien equivalent of lighting a bag of dog shit on fire.
Yeah,
it's just fart-assing around.
It's the adolescence kind of pissing off.
What are you doing tonight? I'm going to go down and pick a couple of blokes. What do you reckon? Yeah, let's go and do that.
Probe a couple of bums, come back home. Good night all around.
Will we get any info out of it? I don't know.
Yeah. As I said to you, if the technology is so advanced that they can fly fucking however many light years away, surely their tech is so advanced that they don't need to probe bums anymore. Yeah. They can scan us with something.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They run a full body. I mean, we're fucking running full body scans here.
They're working with nanotechnology, you know, or something.
I have never had my ass probed to be told what's wrong with me currently. Yeah, so why do the aliens have to do it?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I have not been required to have that either, but I'm not looking forward to having a couple of fingers up the clacker for prostate checks or anything like that.
Yeah, we're closing.
I think I'd rather a metal rod.
I'm closing on in on the fucking year of the two fingers.
Two?
Or three, shit. Whatever the fuck they're getting.
Give me two, I'm out of there.
I'm close to giving bog samples on a regular basis. Shit. Honestly, fucking hell. Yeah.
Well, maybe you should be attracted by a UFO.
The joys of getting old, Jared.
Look, it sounds like the aliens are doing it quick and clean. Just once, and then they can tell you everything.
And yeah, what? They're also kind of knocking you out. You're groggy. Yeah,
exactly. I don't recall it, but I recall sort of something being removed, and then I was back on the forest floor.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd prefer it that way. Yeah. If the doctor just said to me, just head on up to the top of Mount Aisley and we'll pick you up. We'll knock you out and drop you back there at about 3:30.
Look, we've got a specialist is coming down.
I like the sound of that a little better.
Me too. I watched Quiet on Set.
Oh, yeah.
On binge, all four episodes.
Yep, I've been very much on top of it without having watched the whole thing.
Fucking sad.
Yeah.
And gut-wrenching to think about a company of that size and that kind of, with that kind of pull.
Yeah.
Having the kind of fucking scumbags that seem to be in there. Mm. And they name three on the trot in a short period of time.
Yes. One who's been in multiple of those sort of circles,
and
was,
that
was
fucking
named up in the whole Bryan Singer stuff. Yeah, as well.
Yeah, and he was back working.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, what the fuck? And it's clear that a number of those child actors have been harmed by not just the sexual assault side of it, but also the toxic environment that was being created.
Mm.
And one actor in particular has been just, his fucking career has been wrecked because of the abuse he actually suffered. And, you know, just very, very difficult, sort of tough to watch. And the last one is I watched a documentary called What Jennifer Did.
Hear about this one.
Yeah, it's an interesting case. Jennifer, word of the wise. When you're cooking up some bullshit, don't expect the police to not look a bit deeper into your life and then start going, so you've been lying about going to university for 4 years?
Oh, my God.
Clearly something's not right here.
Yeah. They'll go and check with the transcripts office and you know, they'll check enrolments.
Yeah, look, I've got a degree. Don't worry about it. I know detectives who would just go,
yeah, don't worry about that.
Yeah,
no, she's sitting in the interview going, whew, got him. They won't follow up on that. They won't follow up on the easiest thing to check up on.
Yeah, Jennifer, look, we did some digging.
Yeah, they came back in 5 minutes later. Look, we've just been on the blowout of the uni.
You're not enrolled. Yeah, not a bad doco. A little bit Sausage Factory-esque, you know. It looks and feels the same way as a lot of the other ones. But it is an interesting case. So, worth a look.
Good.
And that was it for me. Well, you've definitely got some interest in there.
I've been at the sort of higher end of things.
Have you?
Scouring Tubi and whatnot again. on the back of Rotten Tail. I started with something that we're going to touch on a little bit further down the track as well. I checked back in with the Crow series because I'd watched the first two not that long ago, a few months back, and I just happened to, you know, it was just the cycles of availability again that I was able to check on Salvation and Wicked Prayer.
Were they on Tubi?
Yes. Actually, no, one of them was on Pluto.
Pluto.
Yeah. So, Salvation, I actually think Salvation's better than the second one. I would say that's the second
Salvation, is that the one with Fred Ward?
Yes. And Eric Mabius.
Eric Mabius, yes.
Actually throws an interesting sort of, touch on the premise that he's actually been tagged with a murder.
Is that one got Kirsten Dunst?
Yes.
Okay.
The last two both have strong casts. They've got a lot of actors that continued working for a number of years. But, yeah, the third one's a little more straight down the line. It's a little more – I mean, it's cheap. You can tell it's pretty cheap, but I think it's better than the second one.
Is it more in keeping with the first one?
It's a little bit more – it's a little bit further away. It goes a little bit away from the grungier kind of vibe of the first one and the gothic kind of feel. The second one – from what I recall, tried to sort of keep with that, and they tried to run with an actor who, if you were just looking at a picture in the makeup, would kind of look like Brandon Lee, but as soon as he started sort of talking, it was clear that things had changed a touch.
Yeah.
So I didn't mind that they went a little different with Eric Mabius. He actually looks a bit more like what Bill Skarsgård looks like in the new trailer.
Yes, I did notice that when I looked at that. All of the films again on IMDb.
Yeah, so I was okay with that. This one, I enjoyed it. It's a big step down, but I preferred it to the second one. Wicked Prayer is no doubt the worst in the series. It's, oof, Jesus.
Noted thespian.
Furlong, your favourite.
Edward Furlong.
Danny Trejo pops up for a bit.
Oh, Danny.
Again, there's a couple of, like, Tara Reid.
Yeah.
So the crew, the bad guy crew is Tara Reid, the guy that plays Chosen in Karate Kid and Cobra Kai, Tito Ortiz.
Oh, yeah.
And it's led by David Boreanaz.
Okay.
And as you know, Adam, I was a big fan of Buffy and Angel.
You were
a
David Boreanaz fan.
But he is awful.
Awful.
He is absolutely awful as the lead bad guy.
This was during the period when he was also making Valentine.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I don't dislike the guy as an actor, but just this was not the role for him.
I'm not well, Dennis, Jack.
I'm not well. That's what he should have said to his agent when they said, we've got the fourth Crow movie. I'm not well, Clank. Dennis Hopper pops up.
What?
Dennis Hopper's in it very briefly, and he is talking absolute shit.
On the gear.
I don't know whether he's ad-libbing.
Welcome back with open arms, Dennis.
The fourth one's just a mess.
I don't think I'll waste my time on that one.
No, wouldn't do that. Then I dipped back into Sword and Sorcery, Adam. I couldn't leave it completely.
You couldn't leave it well enough alone.
I'm still sniffing around to see if there's any more. But I watched Lady Hawk, which is
Oh, yeah, that is a legitimately decent picture, isn't it?
It's good.
Is that a
it's
Wolfgang good. Peterson
film? I can't remember. No, I think it's Richard Donner.
Richard Donner?
I believe it was Dick Donner. Donner.
That's got Michelle Pfeiffer and stuff in it.
Well,
it?
The lead
Rutger Hauer?
The lead three are Rutger Hauer, Michelle Pfeiffer, and Matthew Broderick.
Yeah, that's not bad.
And it's a quality sort of. I really enjoyed it. The thing about it is it spends a hell of a lot of time with the leads, so the villain's kind of left in the background. But the story's really, really quite solid, and the curse and things like this that they bring out. I thought it was a nice little story. It wasn't too far removed from like a Princess Bride sort of feel to it.
Okay.
I quite liked it. Mm-hmm. Had a lot of fun with it. Then I got onto two that I'd been meaning to watch for a long, long time. I watched American Mary.
Okay, yes. Catherine Isabel.
It's Catherine Isabel, directed by the Soska sisters, who have just dropped another in a long line of unofficial sequels to Return of the Living. To the Night of the Living Dead.
Have they?
On Tubi, called Festival of the Living Dead, which I'll be checking in on in the next week or two.
Okay.
Yeah, really good. Really good. Catherine Isabel, I think I mentioned not that long ago that we saw her in something.
We saw her in It's a Wonderful Knife.
We did. I'm a big fan of Catherine Isabel, and she's made some really good movies and some that are kind of still under the radar a little bit. Like Ginger Snaps, obviously, to horror fans is something that we would know, but it's still not necessarily a high profile. Like you could still talk to any number of people that you know and ask them if they've seen Ginger Snaps and they've never have heard of it. So, yeah, I still think she flies under the radar a touch. She was also fairly prominent in Hannibal, which I loved. I got a lot of time for Catherine Isabel. Really liked it. It was just a different sort of different story. It involved a little bit of, some things regarding assault and treatment of women and stuff like that that oftentimes strikes me as not done very well.
Yeah.
I actually thought it was really well handled and touches on kind of like body modification and shit like that, which was kind of an angle I wasn't expecting, but very good. Liked it a lot.
Okay.
I followed that up with May.
Yes.
May was very good. Very, very weird little bit of work, but Angela Bettis is fucking fantastic. I did mention that I watched the 2002 version of Carrie, in which she played Carrie.
Oh, yes.
And it's not too dissimilar in, like, she's kind of a socially awkward character in this, but she's awesome. Basically carries the whole movie, but again, it's sort of not a straight-up horror, not what you would expect from a straight-up horror. It's more kind of just that twisted sort of thrillery sort of stuff that just her kind of psychologically breaking as the movie goes along, and it's kind of really interesting to watch. And yeah, good acting performances. I was very impressed with that.
Okay.
Then again, Tubi, love it. They dropped the whole fucking Critters series on there, and I was like a pig in shit. So I kicked off with Critters 1 and 2. I fucking loved it. I thought it was good. It's obviously, you know, it was trying to cash in on the Gremlin stuff, but I love the kind of rural setting to it, and the effects are obviously kind of low key. There's times in the first movie where you can tell, you know, they're cutting between something that's just fucking sitting there and not able to move much other than wiggling. Then they cut to a shot that's clearly a puppet and stuff like that. But I think they do well with what they've got. And the second one managed to keep the sort of keep the same vibe going, and I love the kind of inclusion of the bounty hunters that are trying to fucking catch these things and stuff. I thought it was, yeah, great fun. So looking forward to checking in on the other ones, four. Although I believe 1 and 2 are reasonably well regarded, and then it sort of drops off a little. But
yeah,
looking forward to finishing up with that. And the last thing I watched, Adam, was I had not seen Last Shift, so I thought I'd check it out before.
Yes.
I watched Malum before. I kind of wish I'd done it the other way around, but
liked that. Yeah, it's good.
Quite strong.
Yes. So it'll be interesting looking at the new version against the old
version. It's kind of, it's good to have like the comparison of how it was done with a different budget and stuff.
Yeah, that's true. All right, let's do a quick up or down, Jared. We talked about The Crow. The trailer for is it a remake?
I guess you kind of
it is going with Eric Draven and
I don't know. It's the terminology, right? Like I would call it a remake, but essentially it feels like it's going back to the comic book more than the Bruce Lee movie, like the look of him. And but again, it's going to take its own sort of measures on things.
Obviously, it stars Bill Skarsgård, who is in It, and it's directed by Rupert Sanders, who directed Snow White and the Huntsman. I'm going to lie, it's a down for me. I thought the trailer was bullshit. Like, it just, nothing about it looked remotely interesting. It just, it kind of, you know what it looked like? And I'd suggest this is probably Sanders' background. It looked like a film clip, like a music video clip.
Yeah.
And it seemed like they were trying to find some tone to the dark, between the dark and light, You know, like they're trying to sort of get away, like use a little bit of the grunge, but then, and it just didn't feel like it was gelling at all. And there's nothing in that trailer that makes me go, oh, I wouldn't mind seeing that. Apart from Bill Skarsgård, who I like as an actor. But other than that, it just wasn't doing anything for me.
Yep, I hear. I think I would have to go down as well. I agree. There was some of the imagery that I think looked cool. I didn't mind the look of Bill Skarsgård, but I didn't mind like the part where he was coming out of the blood too. It was a pretty striking image, but everything else looked like, it's as you said, it's kind of like they were trying to go with the quirky out there sort of vibe that the original went with. It didn't look what I would say gothic. I don't know how to describe it other than that, but yeah, the grungy kind of gothic element to it. It looked like they were trying to take a modern twist on that, but it just meant it was all fucking glossy and looked kind of shit. And everything else just looked like a John Wick ripoff, to be honest.
Yeah.
So I'm not as excited as I possibly would have been otherwise.
Yeah. I like the idea of The Crow.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't like to toss this around often, Jared, but I suggest it's we're in Bull's Roar territory.
Yeah.
We are. We're in Bull's Roar.
I like to toss it around every time you mention Jaws too. So,
but there is not one of those Crow films is within a Bull's Roar of the first one.
No, and this is kind of why Salvation initially got me with a positive kind of touch on it was we got to mix up the whole.
Reasoning for the Crow to come back?
Because it looks like this one's going to make it 4 out of 5 movies where it's essentially the same.
Yep. He's been, him and his girlfriend have been murdered.
Yeah.
He comes back for revenge, which is fine.
Because as I said, the third one, she got killed, he got pinned with it, so he goes to the electric chair.
Yeah.
And so there's the unfinished business kind of just a different take on it. I'm like, well, can we not think of how we can shake it up a little more? I mean, I could be wrong on that. I'm just going from a very short trailer, but it looks like it's going to be exactly the same thing on that
regard.
But
this is the thing, Jared. Looking back at the original Crow, not only is it gothic and kind of like in this almost like quasi-Mad Max kind of world, you know, like Devil's Night's just fucking scumbag city. I mean, it's just – it looks like – the place is just overrun with scumbags.
It's Barter Town when the fucking Thunderdome's having their like WrestleMania equivalent.
Exactly. but all the stuff with Ernie Hudson feels real.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
His police work, his on the beat police work, his all that stuff feels a bit real.
Mm.
And his interactions with Eric Draven when he finally sees him. Yeah, there's a kind of a bit of humour to some of that.
There's a touch of Jim Gordon and Batman about that sort of stuff, which I kind of liked.
And I just think his revenge plot in the first one is just so much better handled. Yeah. He just simply is working his way up.
Yeah. Well, did you happen to see Stairway to Heaven?
No.
Because I can't comment on whether that's actually 5 out of 6. I do want to see Mark Dacascos towing some tail as the Crow. I've got to check in on that, see if I can watch it anyway.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind having a look at Stairway to Heaven to see what they did with that. But
didn't last long. Overall, I dare say the reception.
No, she's not fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, I'd reckon. But the first Crow movie is kind of like. They got the vibe of the comic book, I think.
Yeah.
And I don't know a lot about the comic book, but I believe it's got gothic overtones and stuff like that. And I think the mixture of like
it was black and white too, so those kind of dark shades and everything.
But I think pretty well somehow the mixture of kind of like the story elements of the plot from the movie, and I think Alex Proyas probably deserves a fair bit of credit for his style. That seemed to really sort of complement. So, yeah, there's a Bull's Roar between The Crow and all the other Crow films, and I'm highly concerned that we early continue prediction. Roaring when this one comes out.
Are we going with the kind of Maverick sort of who's this for? Are we brave enough to start calling that again?
Jared, I ask, who's it for?
Yeah. I think the thing about this one is at least it's been, what, it's 20 years since Wicked Prayer, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's been a while.
So at least they've given it a bit of a...
time to breathe. I believe they had Jason Momoa.
They've given the ball time to take in a lot of breath before it roars.
And size then, up yeah. the fucking... the guy with the cape.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was a period where Momoa was attached yeah. and then it kind of fell apart. A
couple of people attached. I can't remember. There was another one.
But what I'm asking here is, look, the original Crow was not a massive smash hit.
Right? No, and it has sort of a lasting legacy. Like,
yeah, and unfortunately it comes with a tragedy.
Yes.
Right? So the tragedy
certainly plays into it. Yeah.
But on its own merits, it's a fantastic film and it made good money.
Mm.
Right? The comparison for us to saying that who needs Maverick, who's that for?
Us.
Yeah, clearly. Us and every other fucker in the world. But the first Top Gun was a major hit.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a stretch to see that them trying to do that.
No. Just couldn't have picked that they were going to do it so fucking well, unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly. So what do we know?
Yeah. Well, I think that's been proven many times.
Okay, and I've got one last thing here. OJ Simpson's dead, Jared.
Hmm.
Nordberg's gone.
So that's first on the obituary. The first line.
OJ
Nordberg from the Naked Gun films has passed away.
I think it might have been something about being convicted of something.
Possibly.
Yeah, OJ's gone. So maybe, I mean, I don't know if we want to go into it any further, but I'm not going to lie. His performance as Nordberg always sort of, you know, it was always...
always got a chuckle.
Got a chuckle, but unfortunately until it then went came with...
killed a couple of people. That sort of made it harder to laugh at the bloke.
He was acquitted.
Yeah,
that's good.
Well,
I think OJ, he leaves behind a pretty controversial legacy, I would suggest.
Yes.
And, look, he did some acting.
Who are you tipping for? Who are you tipping to go if they have a Nordberg next to Liam Neeson?
I don't know.
I heard Neeson having a bit of a chat saying he was not going to. He's not aping Leslie Nielsen. He's taking a different approach.
but Neeson's straight face bullshit will work a fucking treat.
Yeah,
if it's funny, like it will work because. He's got that kind of super serious kind of style about him, and it will work if the jokes are good.
Yeah,
very much like Leslie Nielsen worked because he played it kind of straight man esque.
Yeah,
in that.
And the story of him going into that is kind of funny. The fact that they, you know, Airplane lifted lines out of that movie from the '50s, and he was basically just saying them. Verbatim, but he's fucking just something about the way he looked and the way he delivered it made it piss funny.
I love that movie. I love that movie. I really do. And you know what? I could not help chuckle when I heard AJ had died. No.
So you need to continue with that sentence.
The only thing that came to mind was the Naked Gun, right?
Yeah.
And then the first thing that came to mind was during the baseball game when the guy's going back to take the catch and his fucking head falls off and the commentator goes, oh, how about that?
You know the first thing that came to mind for me? When Nordberg's sitting there in the wheelchair and Leslie Nielsen fucking knocks him down the stairs. So in the background of him and Jane, you just keep seeing Nordberg going.
I also did mind steering, gyrating around the place.
Yeah. I'm glad OJ's death brought great mirth and joy.
I love the fact that it brought about no fucking sort of like somberness. Some shit in the movie was in.
Sorry. Yeah, that kind of speaks to the sort
hell.
Of people.
You know what? Honestly, I feel the flames licking at my heels. Very similar to OJ, I'd say.
I was going to say, when you turn up to meet the devil, OJ will come rolling out and you'll accidentally knock him down the... down a flight of steps as you go to shake the devil's hand.
Yeah. Oh, fuck, man. I've been waiting to meet you. Shit. All right, okay. Let's take a break, Jared. And here's the trailer for 2023's Malum.
I can see the fear in your eyes. You saw something you can't explain.
Just wait, rookie.
Call's been rerouted to the new station,
so it should be quiet. There's an emergency. The station's number's on the desk.
Shall be fine.
Hello?
You told us that Captain Lauren's daughter would be joining the department.
Yes, sir. Just want to work where my father worked, even if it's for one night.
He was a hero. Till he wasn't, you know.
Lanford Police Department.
You don't know what happened, but your father was no saint.
Your daddy started something very important.
Tonight we're going to finish it.
The Temple Baron will bring forth the low god, and I will be Redeemer. Infinite Mount.
I can't do this anymore. Just get me out.
We pray in the temple of the low god.
Malum from 2023, directed by Anthony de Blasi, who directed Most Likely to Die. It's produced by Dan Clifton, who produced Brightburn, and Scott Polley, who produced Exhume. And it's written by Anthony de Blasi and Scott Polley. It stars Jessica Sula as Jessica Lauren, Natalie Victoria as Marigold, Munro Klein as Betty, and Kevin Wayne as Nate. The budget, I couldn't find a budget. I don't know what it was. My understanding is it was higher than Last Shift.
Mm-hmm.
And the box office was $710,000 worldwide.
Mm.
So it didn't get a lot of a wide release. And this is, of course, a remake slash reimaging of director Anthony de Blasi's earlier 2014 film, Last Shift. Jared, how'd you feel about this?
I was a little down on it.
Down?
Yeah. I think the idea is sound. I did, as I said, I did sort of watch Last Shift for a little bit of comparison sake. But even prior to watching it, I was a little low on this one. I thought it starts pretty well. There's some elements that work very well, some work with the sound, some creepy imagery that starts quite early. But I feel like it's just a little unfocused in some ways, like maybe not unfocused, but it starts to get caught up in some of the imagery and some of the things that it's showing around
the station
that just don't really. I felt like the level was pretty flat. I didn't feel like it was raising any.
I think it reaches a point,
yeah,
and then kind of flat, just kind of stays there.
And I feel like it hits a point where you get some revelations and whatnot, and it's supposed to kick to another gear, and it doesn't. The last sort of 10 to 15 probably get to that point a little bit, but by then I was kind of not invested anymore. I was a little bored with the whole thing and kind of just wanting it to wrap up.
Mm.
So, yeah, the guy's obviously got a decent eye. He's directed some some nifty little jump scares at times and whatnot, but I was at a two.
Two?
Mm.
See, I was at a three. I liked it. I thought it did a pretty good job of building tension and suspense for a while there and using the location, which is fantastic. I think the idea of the abandoned police station and the lone cop on their own is cool. Where I got let down is, I mean, when you show me the demons at the end and I laughed, Jared. Like, laughed.
Yeah.
Out loud. I was just like, oh, my God, what have you done?
Yeah.
Like, it was like, less is more, fellas.
I definitely think after seeing Last Shift, less was very much more.
Yes.
In this case, I think Last Shift was a fair way better.
Agreed. I actually would have said, I would have given Last Shift 3.5. I think the reason why Last Shift works better is it's a little more focused, a little bit tighter, and it doesn't come with that ridiculous shit at the end.
And it passes out the information a little
I think easier.
It's a little better paced. And I think the reactions of the actress in the lead role also built in Last Shift, whereas this one, she seemed really level for a long way.
And then we get a couple really of moments work. Where she sort of loses her shit. But
yeah.
Last Shift, also the twist, I guess, at the end of Last Shift was more palatable.
Yeah.
Was simply that she'd gone fucking, she thought she was doing the right thing, but she wasn't. She'd fucking gone, lost her mind, basically.
Mm.
This one with the whole demon, like, I mean, fuck, they look like sort of cut rate. Hellraiser Xenobite.
Yeah, I was going to say, it definitely had a Xenobite vibe.
And I was just like, this is so sloppy.
Sort of cosplay Xenobite.
I mean, my God, one of them looked like a fucking, he had a face like a starfish. It's like, oh my God, what are we doing? So I gave it 3 because I felt like there was some good stuff in there.
Yeah.
But you are correct. It kind of jump scares and gets builds up to about here, and then it kind of just goes across like that.
Yeah.
And then it kind of does a little bit of a jump a little bit towards the end, it ramps up a little bit more, but that's it.
Yeah.
So I gave it 3. Location, first like for me.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
It's creepy, it's dark, there are a lot of little places to go.
Yep.
Into the cells and shit, and they do little nifty touch there with the cell.
Yeah.
We've had
stuff like, you know, you look at something like Assault on Precinct 13, and there's a similar sort of setup. But it's an action-y movie. To take that kind of same
premise,
not the same premise, but a similar sort of location, similar idea of a understaffed or zero-staffed police station, and take the kind of demonic element to it.
Yeah,
it's a good idea.
Yeah, it was a good idea, and it works. It builds a little bit of dread. You know, there's a palpable sense of things being a bit off kilter. Which I think works well throughout.
I actually think the evidence video at the start.
Yeah, that's a good little touch.
Certainly achieves a creepy vibe, especially for people. So I watched them in the other order. I watched this one first and then I went to Last Shift.
Mm.
I think it was probably a good idea because anyone that had watched Last Shift would have had a sense of what was coming.
Yeah.
So to approach it from a little bit of a different angle and lead with that.
Good
I
idea.
I thought it did give, you know, the whole Manson family sort of tone to what they were doing and the way they were carrying on. I thought putting it on the video was a pretty good idea.
Yes, agreed. Gets that grainy look and everything like that. You know, it's classic kind of.
Yeah, yep.
Film look. I tell you what took me by surprise. Fuck. When the female cop's talking at the shooting range and gets her fucking head blown off.
Gone.
I mean, out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Well, you should see it coming, but it's just, yeah, so it's a real jolt because I didn't actually think about that.
And again, like we're going heavily into spoilers if you haven't seen either picture, but again, sort of twisting what happened in the first one.
Yes.
Overall, I think it was more successful in the first one, but again, keeping people in mind that had seen that and then throwing this in the mix, hey, it just sort of kicks things into gear pretty heavily.
Pretty nice little nifty jump scare too because the fact that your head just gets blown off in front of you.
Mm.
I did like the slow build, Jared. The homeless guy turning up and pissing himself out the front. The pig, yeah. The prank calls, you know, talking about him coming back and all that shit.
Yeah. See, this stuff, I didn't think it was as – I didn't think it was very successful, to be honest. I thought the that guy comes in at a sort of high level and the phone calls never really felt – like he always knew something was coming there. And there was never any sort of endearing quality built up with the person on the phone.
Mm.
There was never any rapport. It just always felt like, when's this going to turn?
They probably could have done something more with that.
Yeah. I did actually like, though, sort of in keeping with what you were saying there, one of the parts that I did feel worked out was the use of like the basketball. Because, I mean, you see old mate blowing up, which I thought, why the fuck is he kicking a ball around and carry it on. But they brought it back a couple of times just through use of the sound. And then I really dug seeing the dad's silhouette, or what seemed very clearly like the dad's silhouette across the basketball court, just sort of standing in the doorway.
Yeah.
I dug that sort of stuff. I felt that was more successful in building a bit of the sort of the tone of where we were heading and whatnot.
Yeah, agreed. I really did like the scene in the cell, though. Where she brings the homeless guy down.
Mm-hmm.
And then the flashlight falls out of her grip and rolls away. And as it rolls away, when she picks it up, she sees something in the corner. It's like someone bent down like that.
Yep.
And then she brings it up and it's the homeless guy. He's standing there. You know, like
I
liked that. And I thought there was a claustrophobia to that. She was kind of trapped in there with him.
Yep.
And it kind of also played into the fact that she was a rookie. You know, she didn't have experience. She was just trying to do the right thing but fucking things up type of thing. So I liked that. I think there was a real tense sort of atmosphere there. That actually worked well.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. And it's around this part of the movie where I think the use of the sound is at its best. Like, there's really when there's the score, it's very low key and it's very quiet. They use some silence and then, you know, breaking into sound when, you know, someone like him banging on the door, I think was one example. And around that time of the movie, I think that stuff was almost at its best. And I think the sound was one of the most effective ways that they were using to build that tension that you were talking about.
Yeah, agreed. I like this scene to some degree. I also had question marks around some of these characters that they kind of just roll in, like the prostitute or whatever she was. And there's a really nifty bit where she kind of just stops talking and just stares at her for a second.
Yeah.
And then she starts talking about the father. You know, whatever. You know, she starts mumbling about the father and shit and then starts screaming and stuff. That stuff was unnerving.
Yeah.
And kind of creepy. But again, the characters, like they just sort of appear out of nowhere. They come in for fucking 2 minutes and then see you later. And they don't have a lot of connection to things.
No.
Which doesn't help in a way.
Yeah. Again, if you're comparing it to the Last Shift, I think it's done much better in that.
Yes, agree.
The phone calls, the one cop coming in. The prostitute in that one, she just has a chat without the front.
Yeah.
If I recall, and doesn't, well, say if I recall, I didn't watch it that long ago, but there's no element of the possession or anything with her in that instance. And I think it actually kind of builds better. It builds at a better pace. I actually thought, again, going back to the jump scares, the part where she's watching the video.
Of the girl getting bashed?
Well, there's the baseball bat. And there's the interrogations or all the followers.
And I thought the interrogations were good to kind of just flesh a little bit out for us.
I've got a big dislike to that, but the bag over the head while she's watching it, that sort of stuff was really good when they just short, sharp bits like that. All that stuff in the first hour or so I thought was, whenever they did it, I think it worked quite well. It came, as I said, at a point that I didn't love so much. It's as you were saying, there was a good portion to that, and the guy that was playing Malum was, or however you say it, Malum was pretty creepy.
Yeah.
Had a bit of a Bill Moseley kind of vibe.
Yes, he did, yes.
He looked a lot like him, just a young version. And the followers sort of talking and going a little bit off to throw that in the mix when she's just kind of engaged in the screen there and whatnot, I think that was well handled.
Yeah, agreed. I did like bringing back the two cops that we saw at the start.
Mm.
Was it Price and someone?
Yeah.
I guess in a way to actually kind of touch back to the father.
Yeah.
Because they were in the father section at the start.
Uh-huh.
And then it gives you a kind of like a, you get this feeling of like, is one of these guys a bit dusty? Like is someone kind
both of them
dicey?
To be honest.
Yeah. So they kind of play that kind of angle a little bit.
Yep.
Which I thought was okay because we didn't have a lot of returning characters, did we? We didn't have a lot of
barely any
people that she was having much contact with.
Nope.
So I thought that was an all right move to bring them back. And the last thing for me was the girl getting hung.
Yeah.
That's probably the best FX sequence where it cuts through her hand and chops off her fingers and cuts her head off.
The eye popping out.
Yeah.
And the head fucking just bursts like a pimple.
Yeah. And that was genuinely kind of nasty.
That was creepy.
And the effects work there is really good.
Yeah.
Now, the less said about some of the other effects, beyond the better, that, I would have said.
Yeah. That was the last one that I actually had listed.
Yeah.
Myself.
All right. Dislikes.
Okay. Big one off the bat for me. Taking the father and showing that he kind of lost the plot affects the rest of the movie.
Mm.
Because I think looking at it, I think that's what makes the phone calls not work, the relationship with anybody else not work. Because the first guy that she sees, he starts with it, you know, blowing up about her dad killing his friends or whatever. The two cops, when they come in, it's immediately looking like this is just adding to this tone of we know this is fucked up, so why are we bothering to fucking try to tease it out? I actually think, and I didn't know until I watched Last Shift that they'd kind of taken a different approach with that.
Yeah.
I think it worked way better in the first one, and I feel like although that scene of her dad at the start is quite good.
Yeah.
It impacts the rest of the film in a bit of a negative fashion for me.
Okay.
I think every time they were on the phone from that point, it was off.
Yeah.
And you just knew, you were just waiting. Even in the first one, you had a sense that something's going to go wrong here, but the conversation on the phone with the other officers and when the one officer comes in, there's this real caring sort of relating to her and saying your father was a hero and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I think it actually makes the unsettling parts more unsettling.
Okay.
Because I feel like in this one, we were just kind of waiting for it all. We were just like, we know this is fucked up. Let's just get to it.
Yeah, I would agree with some of that. I don't think it's as successful as they were probably hoping for. It's to take it in a slightly new direction. But agreed. I think it kind of impacts a fair bit.
Mm.
On certain parts of the film.
It just adds this layer of, so what are we uncovering here? Which when it uncovers it and shows you what was a little different, it's not all that impactful, I didn't think.
Fair enough. Some of the acting's a little spotty. I feel like there was better performances in Last Shift.
Mm.
And, you know, you seem to have a bigger budget, more money. I felt like you probably could have got some better performers here. Like the father was terrible.
Yeah.
His performance is terrible. And
I think the girl in the lead is quite good.
Yeah, the girl in the lead is perfectly fine.
As I said, I think the things I was down on was I felt like, although I think she's a good actress, I don't know whether it was like a choice, a directorial choice or whatever it is. But as I said, I just feel like there wasn't really an escalation or a huge change in her behavior in a lot of parts.
No.
There was some points where she's on the phone and it's looking a little panicked and then it's just straight back to this level.
Yeah.
That doesn't really go up and down as much as I was expecting it would.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think on a basis of performances, I still feel like Last Shift was better.
Mm.
In that respect, it's kind of convenient, and I know it's for plot purposes, but it's pretty fucking convenient to find a box full of newspaper clippings, which basically, talk about the daily exposition.
Yeah. Like
all the headlines are just exposition dumps. Like it's
yeah.
You haven't even put any effort into making them kind of like quasi like a newspaper would write. Yeah. Head something.
And she finds it pretty easily.
Yeah, yeah. It's just in the locker.
Just
isn't
in
it?
The locker. Yeah.
Notices we dump this shit.
Yeah, this was a tragedy. I don't know if we want
to. No, we don't want to keep that
clipped about it. Yeah.
So yeah. I felt that was, yeah, it's one of those conveniences that's kind of a little bit kind of,
Yeah, yep.
We didn't need to go there.
I hear you. Initially, early on, when she's with her mother, some of that dialogue just seems, it just feels really clunky.
Yes. And a lot of the mother stuff doesn't really land.
No. And there's a couple of lines, like, again, getting some of the exposition out, but they just land with a thud. Like one of the ones that I wrote down was, oh, you're drunk and I'm still going to be a cop.
Yeah.
And then we go from there. Mum starts going on about the toy she leaves there.
Yeah.
Oh, he loved these things.
Yeah, but
this was his favorite.
Shit has no fucking bearing on anything.
Doesn't need to be there.
What's this all about?
Yeah. And then the last one in that particular sequence, I really didn't like the sequence only because of the dialogue, really, but she's like, the mum says, oh, you're crazy or something like that. And she goes, this from the woman that broke my guidance counsellor's arm? I'm like, can we not find a cleaner way to get this out or not even bother with it? Like,
yeah, yeah. It was a little bit forced. It was a little bit clunky.
Yeah.
It's just none of that hit the mark at all. I thought the mother stuff was just a waste.
It put me off a little bit.
Yeah, and again, it didn't really even tie back that decently to the end. Like when they kind of bring that back and it's just kind of wasted.
Yeah.
So I was I was kind of disappointed on all that.
Yep.
Look, it seems to rely on jump scares a lot.
Yeah.
And although they're early on that the jump scare quota is pretty high, but they're pretty successful.
Yeah.
But then it kind of just gets into repetition. So jump scare after jump scare after jump scare.
Yeah.
And we continue to sort of say, we're going to give you something. We're going to tell you what's happening here.
I feel like it gets caught up in the imagery.
Yes.
And starting to throw more of the demonic stuff and starting to throw more, we say hallucinations, but where she's having flashbacks to things. And again, I hate to keep comparing it, but I think the lower budget almost made the story more succinct in the first one.
Yes.
And actually made it a bit of a story. And we get some of that, you know, not being able to shoot the sequence with the father kind of makes it come out in a cleaner fashion.
It teases it out the right way.
Yeah, whereas once we get to, I feel like it's from about, you know, the 45-minute mark, maybe even a little bit earlier, we just seem to keep going from, oh, here's a strange image. Oh, now we'll have a hallucination. Oh, now we'll get a little bit more about the story. Another image. Back to Malum. Back to, like, it just kind of bounced around and I just didn't feel like it was coming out in a, well, it didn't hit with me personally.
No, I would agree there too. It just kind of like was on like a carousel of things that we had to put in every few minutes.
Yep.
Now, effects. Like if you got a higher budget here, like surely you can get me a better effects house. I think the difference is
they went with more things that required effects too.
And so one of the things about Last Shift at Work is you didn't have as many.
No. Not much.
So you didn't really need as much effects work.
But even then, I feel like the simpler look to the demon was creepier.
Yes, totally agree. Because the demons that they bring out are just, they look fucking ridiculous. Like, and it just takes all the wind out of it. Like you just.
Yeah, yeah.
You're coming home. They start to get back to coming home with a bit of a wet sail. You know, there's a bit of a shootout in there and she's firing with the shotgun and everything like that and killing people. And I'm just thinking, yeah, we're going along all right here. And then we stop for a minute to showcase these ridiculous looking things.
Mm.
And it just undercuts everything.
Yeah, it does a little bit.
It's, I mean, as I said, I laughed. And
you weren't supposed to be laughing. No, you definitely weren't supposed to.
So I think effects-wise it struggles.
Yeah.
For something, anything decent there.
Yep, I hear you. I sort of said it already, but I feel like the reveal about the mother being tied up with the cult.
Yeah.
It's supposed to really ramp up and kick things into another gear.
And but, isn't it insinuating that she's the daughter?
Yeah,
of
yeah,
Malin.
Yeah, I think that's what I sort of got.
I mean, to me, that stuck out to me. I kind of was on to that pretty early. I was kind of like, well, yeah, maybe she's connected to him in some way. And then clearly it starts to unravel that, yes, she is the daughter.
Yep.
I felt like that was very unsuccessful.
From that point, we just get a little bit more of the homeless guy, but he's got one leg and he's kind of looking like he's almost sort of transforming into some sort of demonic element himself. But I just didn't feel like it was quickening the pulse very much.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. And again, you are relying on these twists, or whatever you're calling them, and yet they weren't making much of a dent.
No,
in anything.
No, I didn't think so. I mean, this is where I feel like it was more of sort of sluggish and slow, more than slow burn.
Mm.
Just when you hit these parts, and you were just kind of like, ugh. Getting back to the interrogation videos, which I sort of you sort of mentioned that. It filled in a little bit and it gave you a bit of a look at Malum, and that worked. What didn't work was the constant fucking repetition of the lines.
Yes.
I kept fucking replaying the audio of the lines, and I was like, oh, for fuck's sake, can we get past it? It felt a little cheap because I felt like the work that the actors were doing was
okay.
Reasonable enough with a little less of that to carry it through.
Yeah.
Aside from the fact that if I heard the fucking bloke I'll start carrying on about the low god one more fucking time. Oh. I was like, Jesus Christ. Give me the shotgun.
You are fixing to get your head blown off, mate. I'm fucking serious.
Every time he started rambling at the low god. All this
I could show you the low god in a minute.
But then it continued. Like, once we got into those elements where she's running around and she's hallucinating in the demonic, every 2 minutes they're fucking chanting or the logo or this and that. I'm like, oh, God, can we just stop?
Stop.
Stop it. Please.
Stop, stop, stop. And honestly, I felt like coming back to the ending with the demons and her being on the sort of throne or whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah.
That shit was as the least interesting part.
Yeah.
So it's not a good sign when the least interesting part of your movie is supposed to be the kind of the climax.
Felt like they tried to go with a bit of a Hereditary sort of vibe.
Yeah, I felt like they were trying. See, Last Shift was Spuds and Burger.
Yeah.
And so they stuck with, we have to be cagey about what we do.
Yeah.
This one felt like, yeah, we're trying to get elevated.
Yeah.
It's not that type of film, in my opinion.
It didn't land as well for me.
Nah.
It didn't
land at all for me.
Especially as you said, the sort of, you know, the Cenobite light sort of look to a couple.
One guy's got fucking shoulder pads on. It's just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And he comes out and he's got this fucking ring.
You didn't enjoy that?
With his face attached to it? I was just like...
I did actually laugh when it kind of went flying off him onto her. That's the bit where I kind of giggled a little bit.
Yeah, fucking lunacy.
Yeah, look, and that sort of stuff just didn't... It's not what I'm looking for in a movie. I don't find that, especially the way it was done, I didn't find that to be in the least bit scary.
No.
As much as I thought some of the other stuff, the reserved stuff was more scary than that.
I mean, the demon could have just been a standard fucking dude with horns. And, I mean, you could. I mean, this is why Pinhead survived for so long. Pretty simplified look.
A couple of pins in the melon.
But looks great. He looks really good.
Yeah. But so then when you look at, like, you think about that, then you look at, like, you know, Cabin in the Woods, where they did their take on Pinhead, but they just, you know, they put those blades in his head. That looked fucking awesome.
Yeah.
It was clearly like a rip-off was supposed to be very evocative of Pinhead, but that says to me you can take it a little bit further with something like this and still make it look really great. But it didn't, yeah. It didn't
the effects all really round, because there's another bit where a girl, she's had her face bashed in with the baseball bat.
Yeah.
Which looks fine in the evidence video.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's kind of shot in that kind of shaky camera style and everything, and then they cut away from it and they come back to the aftermath.
Yeah.
Which is quite nasty. But then she appears in the room.
Yep.
And she's just like got this triangle of fucking goo or something in front of her face.
As soon as I saw it, I thought, fuck, it's a clicker. For The Last of Us. I was like, yeah, that's exactly what it looked like. Looked like it was starting to grow a mushroom out of her head.
So some of that shit really took you out of it.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is not the way you want to end the film.
No.
You don't want to end with this kind of like laughable group.
No. And I feel
fucking
like,
starfish face guy was the worst.
Yeah. Patrick from fucking SpongeBob. Nightmare Patrick.
Problem was, he wasn't even a fucking nightmare because he had a big smile on his face. He was meant
he's
to be kind of
grand
like,
old time. And then everyone starts clapping and smiling. I didn't
he was meant to be kind of like, it was meant to be like his teeth were kind of like just, you know, like a sort of, you know, like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Just sort of clenched together.
Yeah.
But he was in such a state that he fucking looked like he was he's laughing. Oh, Christ's sake.
Not happy with it.
Well, to me, it took away. I could have given the film 3.5.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like there was enough there. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
But then when they came on screen, I was just like, oh.
You fucking just.
Fucking hell. I toyed Matilda.
It's funny that his head looked like a fucking star because you just got rid of one.
Yeah, you lost one.
But no, I make a lot of comparisons to Last Shift. But the funny thing was, I was down on some of this stuff prior. These are like, I didn't amend any notes after watching Last Shift. I just kind of, it was the same sort of notes. But then seeing Last Shift, I was like, oh, well, fuck. They did some of this stuff better. Some of the stuff that we were sort of looking for was I felt way more effective. Like the less is more is
well, it works better.
True in this instance.
Well,
I think
it's funny because I kind of feel like this doesn't feel like a necessity. Do you know what I mean?
Far as I know, I believe the producer approached the director about doing another movie in that same world.
Yeah.
And they sort of ended up on, why don't we just redo it?
And I think it's, although I found it a bit more palatable than you, I feel like looking at Last Shift again, it wasn't necessary to remake it.
No.
Because you didn't improve on it greatly.
No.
In fact, you went backwards.
It's only 10 years.
Yeah. So you went backwards on it.
It hasn't dated itself. It didn't have references. It didn't. I mean, she pulls out a phone at one stage and I was kind of like, oh, shit, she's got the flip phone. Like, but other than that, there was no kind of references of.
Did you have a flip phone?
I had a couple of flip phones, I think. I had one with a stylus. I think it was a flip phone where you pulled a little stylus out of
what
it.
What the fuck?
It was a Sony Ericsson.
No, you didn't. I had a flip phone and it had a, you could put your own ringtones and shit in it. This is one of the early ring.
Yeah.
And also message tones. And I had, my message tone was, I'm Rick James, bitch.
Yeah.
And it used to fucking go off all the time. Like I'd be at work all you could hear is, I'm Rick James, bitch. People got the shit. And
I also remember, I think it was the same sort of period, very early, where I discovered how to clip audio bites and then make that your fucking ringtone and message tone. And you came around and we made one for you of Chucky. Yeah. Hi, I'm Chucky. Want to play?
Yeah.
You told me a week later people wanted to fucking kill you.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. I did learn early on that just silence that shit, dude. No one needs to hear it.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. The prime example of that actually had to do with you.
Hmm.
I got thoroughly embarrassed with the ringtone that I had set for you. I was sitting down meeting someone that I'd been intending to meet for ages. So it was very, you know, I'd set up a different ringtone for every person.
Was this a serious meeting?
Well, no, it wasn't a serious meeting. It was a casual meeting, but it was sort of, you know, in moving in a circle that I wanted to get into and whatever, and sort of to do with stuff that I now work in and whatever.
Yeah.
But I'm sitting there chatting away and then my fucking phone goes off with you ringing me and I had you set for Kenny Loggins playing with the boys.
Oh, Jesus fucking just burst Christ. Out. Playing with the boys. And like, even though fucking, you were embarrassed, you were like fucking.
Everybody stops and kind of looks at me. You know. Yeah. It's a gag. It's supposed to be kind of funny. Russ just sort of looking at me.
But then you started going, fucking.
I said, I'm not going to answer this because I just want to get to it.
Sunset. I saw the film clip for that song, and we have gone way off the fucking tangent.
We're well off.
Off the tangent, but I saw the film clip for that song recently.
Yeah.
Jesus, Kenny.
Kenny had a fair old bouffant, if I recall.
He did have a decent bouffant, a solid beard.
Solid beard.
Kenny, it's funny because even his film clip for Danger Zone seems a little bit the same.
Mm.
He's sort of sitting around in a bedroom. Is that actually a Danger Zone, Kenny? Because,
what are you trying to tell us, Kenny?
Surely in the 80s, Kenny, that was not a Danger Zone for you. Do you know what I mean? Kenny was on Riding High.
Kenny was Riding High.
Back then. But playing with the boys, none of that. I mean, if you actually listen to the words, it doesn't sound great.
I'm out here chasing sunsets. Yeah. It's one of life's simple joys, Adam.
Yeah.
Playing with the boys.
Yeah, okay.
It doesn't sound good.
Kenny. But that was it for me. It ends with a real fucking whimper
for me.
And that's why I took away the, like I felt we were moving in some pretty good territory for a while there. And then bang, it just comes apart.
Yeah, it was all pretty strong. I mean, aside from old mate that she first meets fucking kicking a basketball, like I'd be rolling in there going, hey, buddy. Take some vacation time.
Take it easy, big fella.
You want to go and get a coffee?
Yeah. if you're not careful, motherfucker, you'll be looking after this place.
They need to de-stress,
mate. I actually don't feel like they successfully kind of integrated the fact that she was on her own, she was out of her depth. Like, I don't feel like that was successfully done. Yeah. Even though you do get those moments where she meets the copper and he kind of makes out like she's fucking wet behind the ears and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It wasn't as successfully handled. I always felt more so in it was better in Last Shift again.
Mm.
That you could tell she was a bit out of her depth. That it was sort of where we were. It didn't come across as well in this one. And again, it just felt like you had a chance to do something different or you had a chance to kind of play with this a little bit better. Didn't feel like you took it far enough.
Yeah, I don't think the changes were necessarily what needed to be changed.
No, agreed. So is that everything for you?
Yeah, that's it, unless you got any other silly stories about ringtones.
No, I don't.
Didn't have a crazy frog at any point, did you?
No, wouldn't put it
past you.
I heard that song the other day. I was just like, who the fuck? This was number one. It was. That was number one in Australia for several weeks.
Oh.
And my daughter used to put it on and be like,
mate, if one of my kids put it on,
this is not that music.
That CD or whatever phone it's coming from would be quietly disappearing and would then be found in the back shed fucking smashed up by a hammer.
But you know what? Didn't Crazy Frog have Axl F?
Yeah, it was Axl F. It was basically Axl F.
And he used to go, bang, bang.
He'd do Axl F and ding, ding, then he'd finish up with a bit of a ding, ding, ding. I'm like,
holy shit. That was a fucking dark period in music because there was a fair bit of that kind of bullshit floating around.
Yep.
I mean, Lou Bega was making waves.
Lou Bega was well before that. We had more sense than that. I mean, at least we went for things like Who Let the Dogs Out. At least it had lyrics.
Fucking hell. Who Let the Dogs Out? It was at the Baja bin.
Yeah.
Oh, like Christ. Honestly. All right. That was Malum. You can find us on Podomatic, iTunes, Spotify, and wherever else you get your podcasts. Send us an email at thrillme@iinet.net.au. Like us on Facebook at Thrill Me Podcast Australia and at Podomatic at thrillme.podomatic.com. We're also on Instagram at Thrill Me Podcast AU. Just out of interest, we weren't connected to YouTube. You know, YouTube has its own podcasting sort of thing, and I had to, you have to release it to via Podomatic to do the job for us. Made a right fucking hash of that now, didn't I?
I bet you did.
I don't know what's happened to it. So if you're hoping to get it on YouTube, don't.
Yeah, I think YouTube's fucking heard it and just said fuck.
No, no.
They need to put that up there.
They haven't even got back to me.
YouTube will take anything, but they won't take us.
Yeah. But keep an eye on the Facebook page for what we do with our next film. But until then, take it easy, everyone, and we'll catch you all later. Cheers.
Find the podcast at Podomatic or on iTunes. Don't forget to rate and review. Like us on Facebook at Thrill Me Podcast Australia, or contact us at thrillme, all one word, all lowercase, at iinet.net.au.